I had zero communications with the electors in Arizona, zero involvement in any of the election litigation in Arizona or legislative hearings. An arraignment on charges that, in my view, should never have been brought. I, of course, pled not guilty.
All right, that's the voice of John Eastman, who's been our guest so many times. John has now been arrested and arraigned in Arizona for interfering with their election, along with a bevy of other names that you're going to recognize. It is an outrageous, another form of lawfare and the attempt to destroy and discourage and bankrupt and break up families, really, quite frankly, of these people who believed that Trump was the real winner in 2020, or at the very least, that we should make sure that in these states where there was trouble in coming to conclusions, where there was a lot of malfeasance, messing with the rules, coloring outside of the lines, mail-in ballots, all of it, that it could be determined before we declared a winner. But no, we couldn't have that. And so because these people tried to fight for that, they're now being persecuted. I think that's the word for it. So we're going to talk about this today. We're going to go to Arizona and talk to a reporter who's been covering all of this, and we'll do that in a second. Kamala Harris shouts all the time about the right to abortion. Do you think she ever takes a minute to think about what does God think? Does Kamala think about God? Do these leftists think about God? Do they ever think about that? Did they ever think about how God feels about their love for this, their bloodlust, really it is, for the death of babies, that's more important than anything else in their universe? I don't know. I think human sacrifice, of course, has been around since the beginning of time. The god of Moloch was an ancient Canaanite god associated with the sacrifice of children. And there were so many more. So the next question is, I think, is we need to take a moment to think about what God really does think. It didn't go well for civilizations who sacrificed their children. And it won't go well with us if we don't stop this. Preborn is leading the charge in this nation, rescuing babies from this horrific practice. Every day, their network of clinics sees 200 babies saved and given life. Once a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears that heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. So it's just $28 for one ultrasound. So I'm encouraging you to go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. And you know that you can call us. You do know this, right? Do you write this? You should write this number down so that when you hear something and you want to comment, you can call. You put it on speed dial on your phone. Is there speed dial? I don't know. Put it in your contacts. It's 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can go on any podcast platform to listen to Sandy Rios 24/7. AFR, AmericanFamilyRadio.net is our home base. If you go to my website, sandyrios.com, you can also listen, and that's pretty easy. You can go to any social media platform, and there we are too. All right, so today we're going to go out to Arizona and talk about the arrest in recent days and arraignment of John Eastman and all of these other wonderful people who simply stepped up to the plate to try to sort things out in Arizona and the very confusing 2020 election on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Not guilty.
That's the first of 18 pleas for those accused of attempting to switch Arizona's 2020 electoral votes and give them to then-President Donald Trump. ABC 15's Manuelita Beck gives us a look at the first day in court for what's likely to be a lengthy legal process.
former Trump attorney John Eastman in Phoenix today.
State of Arizona versus Eastman, time set for the not guilty arraignment.
Pleading not guilty to charges stemming from the 2020 fake elector scheme. Eastman telling reporters after the three-minute hearing that he would be exonerated.
I had zero communications with the electors in Arizona, zero involvement in any of the election litigation in Arizona or legislative hearings.
He's one of the dozen and a half Republicans who are accused of being involved in the fake elector scheme that crossed nationwide and was built on the falsehood that Trump won the election in 2020.
The arraignment on charges that, in my view, should never have been brought. I, of course, pled not guilty.
Eastman is the first of those charged in Arizona to appear in court. Most of the others are expected to be arraigned next week, except for Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani, who so far has avoided a subpoena to appear in Arizona court. For ABC 15's political team, I'm Manuelita Beck.
I'm so happy the reporters are so objective in their reporting. Don't you know you can trust that outlet for anything? No, I don't think so. They cannot hide their disdain. They characterize things with, you know, adjectives that tell you what to think, and that's what happened in that report. John Eastman, of course, if you listen to me, you know he's a good friend. You know I've had him on the show a lot, but of course, I've met him in the course of his great life. He's lived it well. He was the dean of the School of Law in Chapman University. John was one of the leaders of the Federalist Society, well-respected, traveling all over the country, a constitutional attorney with a really photographic memory. He clerked for Clarence Thomas. Now here's the thing. John was an attorney to President Trump leading up to the 2020 election. John is the attorney who was standing on the stage on January 6th, with that big hat and talking to the crowd and also telling that people that to encourage Mike Pence to not accept the electors presented that day that were going to be presented moments after they spoke, because there were states that are actually asking for this process to be stopped so that they can go back and check about the electors because there were so many disputes in so many states. But so John, because he found constitutionally that Vice President Pence actually could have done that, has had the whole world come down on him. He's a criminal now, you see, or at least he's accused of being one. He's had his law license taken away in California. They're challenging his license in D.C. That's his livelihood. He's had to move to a completely different state. His family are threatened. They've spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. His girls have spoken up in respect and honor for their dad, writing a beautiful piece. His wife still supports him, and John refuses to acknowledge a falsehood, that he's a criminal in any way. And so there's someone who's been covering this just absolutely so faithfully. She has covered all of the, I believe, every minute, really, of the hearing where John eventually has lost his law license in California. She's a reporter for the Arizona Sun-Times and also the Star News Network. And she's joined me before, and I'm always pleased when she does because of the time difference and because she works so hard to cover the news. Her name is Rachel Alexander. Rachel, good morning.
Thanks so much for having me on, Sandy, and for everything you do for John.
Yeah, well, we're both on the same team in certain terms of the trying to report what's true. Rachel, you are also an attorney, right?
Yes, I practiced law for 12 years.
Yeah. Okay. So you did you not? I don't want to overstate it, but you did kind of observe every minute of John's hearing in California, right?
I did every single minute, and you know they came after me. I sat through my own hearing years ago, so I was very interested to track what was going on with him.
Yeah. Well, people, I mean, they know in general because I've reported on it, but and you've written synopses about it. So can you synopsize this for us? What actually happened? What are the things we should know about what happened in that hearing?
Well, I think some of the biggest news that came out of it was all the experts on election fraud around the country, these top names like John Droz and Garland Favorito of Voter GA, they came out and they exposed the fraud. So all the evidence that these corrupt judges around the country will not look at, and a lot of them admit in their opinions that they don't even look at the evidence, this came out at the trial. And the other second major takeaway from the trial is that the mainstream media, like that clip you played, talked about fake electors. Well, the top constitutional law experts in the country, like John Yoo, the Berkeley professor, who's a friend of John Eastman's, he testified that pretty much throughout history, there have been all these alternate electoral slates, and the vice president did have the substantive authority to accept or reject them.
Well, I think the point I'd like to insert, and I'm sure you've made it too, and it needs to be inserted again because of the fake news and all of the talking points they continue to repeat. John is a constitutional attorney. He was hired to give his opinion based on the Constitution of what could and could not happen. He gave his legal opinion. And even if he was, you know, on the moon with an opinion, like so many of the attorneys on the left are, that's not criminal. An attorney can give their opinion. Rachel, as an attorney, can you not give your opinion? Is just words or a suggestion a criminal act? Can it be?
Well, it's very Orwellian. They're basically punishing a thought crime. And look at all the attorneys who represent the most heinous, evil, murdering terrorists in the world, and nothing ever happens to them, no matter what kind of advice they give. They lie. You know, they're fine lying for their clients, you know, acting like their clients never murdered all these people. Nothing ever happens to those attorneys.
Well, and you and I both know, because we know John, that he is just a man of impeccable character. He always just tells it straight and just calmly. And when they try to intimidate him and say to him, John, will you, you know, recant? Will you admit that you lied? Will you admit that this was, you know, you've done something here that you shouldn't have done? He says, no, I haven't. And then he just he proceeds to explain to them why they're wrong very clearly and succinctly. It's pretty amazing. But you found out something about this judge that headed the disbarring procedure for John. Now, I did not even know that it had been finalized, because it's gone on for so long that I guess that the hearing itself was a month long, but this has been in the works for months, has it not, Rachel?
Right. The closing statements were due like December 1st. And the judge did not issue her final opinion for months later. I believe it was it like April 1st or something?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right, or later even than that, but in April. Okay, so you found out. Her name is Yvette Rowland. What have you learned about her?
So she likes to donate to Democrats, even while she's sitting on the bench. And, you know, some states don't prohibit that, so she can get away with it. But what was really sleazy about it was she contributed to this Democrat PAC, which funneled all of the contributions to a super PAC that seeks to stop undermining the most basic tenet of our democracy, the right to vote. So she's in direct conflict to what she ruled on with John. She should have never heard this case. She should have recused herself. But I feel like the system is so corrupt, nothing will happen to her.
Oh, well, yes. I just did a whole show on Merrick Garland and his refusal to acknowledge the congressional request for that tape of the interview with Joe Biden and the special counsel, Robert Hur. So, yeah, we have a lawless Justice Department. I think we all know that, Rachel. And that's why journalism, good journalism, like what you're doing, where you actually sit there in the courtroom and you're reporting daily, the hearing room, I should say, for John and other things, too. Is so valuable. I personally believe that truth has a power of its own, and so we're just going to keep telling the truth. But now, the reason I wanted you to be with me today is because John was arrested just in the last few days. I'm not sure when this is going to air, so I would just say recently, like in the last week, 2 weeks, he's been arrested and arraigned in Arizona. Tell us what that's about. What's the charge?
So the alleged Arizona Attorney General, Chris Mays, a lot of us don't believe she was really elected because Abe Hamadeh supposedly lost by 280 votes, but there are 9,000 provisional ballots that were never counted, and the reason they weren't counted looks very sleazy. Well, anyway, this Chris Mays has gotten indicted on the alternate electoral slate from Arizona for Trump, and a few others she threw in there, like some of the attorneys who, you know, who might have been talking to them. And John was one of them, but it doesn't really make any sense, as you know, because John had nothing to do with any of the Arizona litigation over the 2020 election. They're really stretching at it. They're charging him with conspiracy, fraud, forgery, and related felony charges. But he, again, he didn't have anything to do with this electoral slate. So that's what he's fighting here in Arizona now. It's the second prosecution because we know he's also being prosecuted in Georgia.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it's all about draining him. I just see it in his face. As we see it in President Trump's face in those courtrooms, they're just punishing people, punishing, trying to drain their resources. In many cases, destroy their families. Rudy Giuliani, I think, as I understand it, is bankrupt, or at least close to it if he isn't. And that's good news to them. That's what they're trying to do. So it is so bizarre that they would charge John, in particular in Arizona, when, as he's plainly stated and you just restated, he had nothing to do. He was never there talking to electors. It's just crazy. I think we probably should say, Rachel, again, that this is part of our history, that a second set of electors are often used in contested elections. We have generations of those situations, and they're not that long ago. I think somewhere in Hawaii, just maybe 20 years ago, I'm not sure, off the top of my head. But this is a custom. This is customary, so that if the electoral college gets hung up or something changes, these electors are ready to stand in and be counted for the candidate that actually got the most votes. It's very common, maybe not so common, but it's not uncommon practice in our history, and it is constitutional. So they have this attorney general of yours, so-called, as you just described, Chris Mays, came out with some statements, and I thought it would be interesting, Rachel, to hear your comments on her comments. Are you game to do that?
Let me pull up the article. It was just so full of, in my opinion, lies. And I believe that there was like one sentence where she literally said three false things in one sentence. It was that bad.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you hear. We're going to listen to her and let you, and then let you respond to this. Adam, let's start with, this is her opening statement, because she did make a very long statement. And this is the Arizona AG, sort of, Chris Mays. Let's listen.
Hi, I'm Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. Let me start by thanking everyone for your patience as we conducted a thorough and professional investigation over the past 13 months into the fake elector scheme in our state. I understand for some of you today didn't come fast enough, and I know I'll be criticized by others for conducting this investigation at all. But as I have stated before and will say here again today, I will not allow American democracy to be undermined. It's too important.
Okay. So Rachel, fake elector scheme. Again, this is the practice the United States has had for a long time. So that's how she started it. So let's just go ahead and listen to the first long statement. And this is clip 13.
We're here because justice demands an answer to the efforts that the defendants and other unindicted co-conspirators allegedly took to undermine the will of Arizona's voters during the 2020 presidential election. Arizona's election was free and fair. The people of Arizona elected President Biden. Unwilling to accept this fact, the defendants charged by the state grand jury allegedly schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency. Whatever their reasoning was, the plot to violate the law must be answered for, and I was elected to uphold the law of this state. The scheme, had it succeeded, would have deprived Arizona's voters of their right to have their votes counted for their chosen president. It effectively would have made their right to vote meaningless. After the general election on November 3, 2020, the defendants and other unindicted co-conspirators raised false claims of widespread voter fraud in Arizona to pressure elections officials to change the outcome of a transparent, free, and fair democratic election. Those efforts ultimately failed when officials stood firm followed their statutory duties and officially certified Arizona's election on November 30th, 2020.
All right, Rachel, have at it. I'd like you to respond to those comments, if you could.
Well, first of all, I just have to say that lecturing feminist voice of hers is just so grating. Like, oh, man, I could barely stand to listen to ours. Why don't people get voice training? I don't know. So the worst sentence in there by her was the one where she talked about, you know, false claims of widespread voter fraud, pressure election officials, and, you know, to change the transparent, free, and fair democratic election. Okay, first of all, these people being prosecuted did not raise claims of widespread voter fraud. That is a red herring the left uses. They raised claims of possible election illegalities in a few swing states. That is not widespread voter fraud. And the reason they do that is because actually proving voter fraud is very difficult, and it's never actually been the standard to overturn elections, but because it's so hard to prove, but the left tries to get people to think that. Secondly, pressure election officials to change the outcome. No, John and some of the other people involved, they merely talked to the legislature and said, let's look into options of what we can do. And then finally, as for the election being so transparent, free, and democratic, that's not true at all. Lots of people testified during both John Eastman's disbarment trial and Jeffrey Clark's disbarment trial about how it wasn't a free and fair and election. There was just so much corruption and so much wrongdoing and so much illegalities that, you know, the whole election was bogus.
You know, Rachel, I remember listening to hours of testimony in Arizona of people who participated in the election there in 2020. Just regular people, but very capable people, people that were number people, people that were like professionals, of different stripes, maybe doctors. I'm not sure what their designations were, but I was very, very impressed. And they very steadily presented things they had actually seen themselves that were, that certainly sounded on their face illegal. And there were tons of them. The hearing room was filled. I bet you were there. Were you there for those hearings?
You know, I wasn't, because I did not start this position until, like, it was mostly over.
Okay. Well, I tell you, you should be proud, because the Arizonans were, it was so impressive. And I thought for sure, you know, that something would be done about what they were presenting, but instead they're cast as the villains in this. And you have people like Kelly Ward and Michael. Kelly's the former chairman of the Republican Party there. She's a strong conservative, she and Michael both. I'm sure, and Jake Hoffman, he's a state senator now, right?
He's one of our best.
Yeah.
I mean, they're stretching.
Yes. Okay. So, and then in addition to this, your Attorney General, Chris Mays, has also indicted other people like John Eastman, who have nothing to do with he's not one of the electors, but Mark Meadows, at least we think. I think maybe that's speculation. Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and the others that have been working with Trump in this election process, who are national people, they are also, we believe, unindicted co-conspirators. Is that right?
Yes, and I believe Mark Meadows and Rudy Giuliani, they've both been indicted at this point.
Okay, for out of Arizona.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then your AG goes on to say, Chris Mays goes on to say, kind of lay out the plot, and I would really like to get your. Let's talk about this, Rachel, because she lays out how these terrible, no good, horrible people with this scheme for alternate electors, which is, again, not uncommon practice in this country through the decades, but now it's a scheme. But she lays out this plot. So let's listen to it, because she's persuading people, and we need to listen and actually try to bring some truth to what she's saying. This is clip 14.
The defendant Republican presidential electors, allegedly plotting with additional defendants, then voted for Mr. Trump and Vice President Pence on December 14, 2020, falsely claiming to be the duly elected and qualified electors for President and Vice President of the United States from the state of Arizona. These defendants deceived the citizens of Arizona by falsely claiming that those votes were contingent only on a legal challenge that would change the outcome of the election. in reality, the defendants intended that the false votes for Trump and Pence would encourage Vice President Pence to reject the certified Biden-Harris electors' votes, regardless of the result of any legal challenge. As you will recall, none of the legal challenges filed in Arizona state and federal courts regarding the 2020 election were remotely successful at any stage of the case. When combined with the six other states where Republican electors sent in uncertified votes for Trump-Pence, the defendants wanted Pence to declare Mr. Trump the outright winner of the election or to send the vote back to friendly legislatures that would have certified Trump-Pence as the winner of the election. That scheme failed when Vice President Pence upheld the rule of law and accepted all certified Biden-Harris votes on January 6, 2021.
I have to jump in because of what a lie. I don't recall John Eastman or anyone saying immediately declare Trump the winner. That's not what this dispute was about at all. Unless I'm missing something. Am I missing something, Rachel? Did the electors in Arizona demand that the process declare Trump the winner without kind of going through these disputes in the various states?
But notice she doesn't quote anybody saying that. So
no.
Exactly. She's claiming that she's inside their head, and she knows that that's what they were thinking, and that they really weren't filing these lawsuits in order to, you know, change the outcome so they could choose their electors. Because she's in their head, and she knows that they really didn't try to do that. And, it's such a ball of lies from this woman. And then she said the scheme failed when Vice President Pence upheld the rule of law and accepted all certified Biden-Harris votes. Well, she's just assuming that the rule of law is what she's interpreting it. And I want to get back to that Hawaii case, because in 1960, you mentioned it earlier, there were three slates of alternate electors, okay? And one of them was not even government certified. Like the governor hadn't certified it, the legislature hadn't certified it. There was no difference between that slate versus the slate now, the alternate, you know, the Republican slate that they're trying to prosecute. And so I just don't understand how Mays can just completely pretend it's Orwellian. She's just ignoring history. And
well,
that was election fraud accusations back in 1960 and court litigation going on just like there was in 2020.
Yes, we have a long history of that. I think John Eastman has written about that a lot to make his case. And it's true. I mean, it's not just an argument, a legal argument pulled out of the sky, which is what the left is doing. This is actually true. And we have several examples of that. So the electors were perfectly legal, and now they're criminals. And, of course, it was a plot, according to her. And I would also emphasize again, there was no statute, there's no law, there's no legality, there's nothing in the Constitution. There is a law now because Congress rushed to pass one, even though they said, the Democrats who were running it, said that that the Constitution said that the vice president just counts the numbers and has nothing to say about it. We know that in our history that's not true either, and there's nothing in the Constitution that limits him to just doing that. So that's a lie when they say that he was doing, you know, following the statutes, whatever word they used there, what she just said. He wasn't doing that at all. It's not specified in the Constitution. But now the Congress has rushed to pass a law to say that the vice president can only just, you know, accept the electoral votes and announce the numbers. So they evidently they thought maybe there was some wiggle room there, too.
Well, that's the irony of it. If the Constitution is so clear that the vice president does not have substantive authority, then why do you need to pass a law making it clear? They're so dishonest. And the thing is the top constitutional experts, John Eastman and, you know, this professor Yu, they're saying that the Constitution does make it somewhat clear that the vice president has the substantive authority. So why do we believe these Democrat activists interpreting the Constitution over the top constitutional scholars in the country?
Well, because we listen to that Arizona outlet, places like the Arizona outlet we started the show with, who tell people what to think, and people don't know what the Constitution says, and they just lost their way. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. I want to kind of reset the stage, Rachel, for 2020, because I want people to remember we were in such turmoil. There were reports of voting malfeasance all over the country. In Pennsylvania, they actually did illegal acts by changing the dates where they would close acceptance of mail-in ballots. We know that they broke the law. In fact, that case really did go up to the Supreme Court and for consideration. And I believe John was involved in this one. And it was rejected. And I remember Alito wrote this scathing minority opinion, rejected that they would even hear it. The reason that these cases have not gone through the courts, and that there's been very few satisfactory findings, at least for those of us that are concerned about what happened, is because they were stopped or people didn't have standing. Did you really have, I'd like for you to comment on that in Arizona. You know about what happened there. Were there some court cases that you know of that should have gone forward that were stopped by people that shouldn't have stopped them?
Yeah, we've had so many of those here, especially regarding Carrie Lake and Abe Hamadeh's election challenges. These judges have been a dismal failure. I don't know whether they're just scared or whether somebody has blackmail on them, but they will not allow them to have these full trials going over the evidence. You know, Abe Hamadeh found out that there were all these undervotes for him in Pinal County, which is, you know, how his defeat got narrowed to 280 votes. And so he asked if he could have a retrial based on all the undervotes in other counties, and the judge wouldn't allow it. I mean, this is unheard of. How can you just ignore all these votes that were not counted in Arizona?
Rachel, I want to ask you about Arizona's been hard for me to keep up with. I try to keep up with every state, so that could be the challenge right there. In the last election where the printers did not rejected ballots or stopped working, shut down, and we saw videos of poll workers or the people in charge of the polls telling people to go home or to go to other places with long, long lines of voters. Has that ever been resolved in Arizona about what the problem was and what was happening there?
Never. And we all know that it disproportionately affected Republicans, since Republicans vote heavily on Election Day. And every single lawsuit that's been filed about it has gone nowhere. And Maricopa County refuses to turn over all kinds of evidence in public records requests and even discovery. And they're getting away with it, and they just keep saying it was just a glitch. But, you know, one of their co-elections directors, Scott Jarrett, he's been caught lying on the stand talking about whether, you know, he knew about the problem versus, you know, when he did find out about the problem. And so these complicit judges just keep saying, well, it was just a glitch, even though, you know, the person running for challenging our Maricopa County recorder now, Justin Heap, he said thousands of Republican voters were disenfranchised.
Oh, I think so, too, just based on observation. I saw those long, long lines that people couldn't vote. And then they'd waited for hours, you know, did interviews with people in the lines. And then they had to go to polling places that sometimes were closed by the time they got there. It was a fiasco. And so I wanted to mention that story because I wanted people to kind of get an understanding of why it's hard to trust what's happening with the elected officials in Arizona now. And Arizona has had, I don't even know where you are with this, Rachel, but I know Jake Hoffman is one of them. There's been a bit of a mini revolt in the ranks of fighting the establishment Republicans. And the last I heard, Kelly Ward was doing a great job of that before others. There's this battle because, okay, I'm going to say this. The McCain family has a stronghold on Arizona, and a lot of their former staffers, and it's like a Bush. Bushes have that nationally. They have a domain, a dynasty, and the McCains have that in Arizona. And John McCain hated conservatives. I could just say that. I could play clips. So where are you in that battle? Is it still going on? or the conservatives won and now they're being charged with crimes so that they can't do anything. Is that more the take on it?
Everything you said is 100%. And Cindy McCain just had some huge meeting at her house where Alex Soros, the son of George Soros, was out there for the party. So the McCain legacy is still alive and well, and their people are still, they've infiltrated politics here everywhere. The difference is, as you said at the end, MAGA has taken over Arizona thanks to people like Kelly Ward and Jake Hoffman. So the McCain people are a bit muted, but, you know, they're still there. I mean, you've got Ken Bennett in the Senate, who's looking like he's going to be the one rhino vote that defeats a lot of good legislation that we're trying to get passed. Like, we're trying to send a measure to the ballot on election integrity right now, and he looks like he might defeat that legislation. So we still have all that lingering, and like you said, they're trying to stop the MAGA by prosecuting them. But you know, I personally believe once they prosecute MAGA, then they're going to after the rhinos because the Democrats don't play in the sandbox well with anybody.
No. Oh no, I think that's absolutely true. I've said that too. It's like you guys think you're gonna kind of save yourselves by compromising with the left. Nah, you know they don't care. They'll come and eat you too after they finish the conservatives. But Carrie Lake, where is she? Do you have an idea, Rachel, of where she is in her fight for the Senate there?
Well, if you believe Rasmussen Reports polls, which has always been the most accurate one, and I still believe they are, even though the election fraud makes them look like they're not, Carrie's at least 3 or 4 points ahead of Ruben Gallego in polls. The mainstream media polls have it a little closer. Some of them have Ruben ahead of her. But I personally believe they're skewing their polls right now because they think there's going to be cheating. So they're trying to justify, oh, this is how Ruben Gallego is going to end up winning.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's how it's played. Well, I want to talk to you about a conference you're having tomorrow. So that'll be the one last thing. But John Eastman, of course, is being they're trying to take his law license away, coming back to John in D.C. And do you know anything about that, just briefly?
You know, I haven't been following the D.C. case as closely, probably because they move way, way, way slower. It took a couple years for them to even have a trial for disbarring Jeffrey Clark, Trump's former DOJ official. So, and they might just decide to copy the California bar and disbar him as a reciprocity thing, and he might not even get a trial.
Oh, that's fair. Okay, well, that's where we are. You're hosting a conference tomorrow, or organizing, and I would love for you to tell people what it is because it's something they can watch online. Tell us about what you're planning, and if you can tell us who's presenting, that would be great.
So it's called the Get Trump Lawfare Conference. It's put on by Davos in the Desert. It's going to be all virtual all day tomorrow, beginning at the early morning, 7:30 a.m., and we've got John Eastman himself speaking. We've got a bunch of other legal experts. Some people might recognize some of these names. Let's see, what's the one I was thinking of? Well, never mind. Anyways, Robert Gouveia, he does a criminal podcast. He's been covering the Trump trials very closely. He's going to be one of them. Robert Barnes from the Viva & Frey podcast. He's another one. And basically, we're just going to be talking about all the lawfare against Trump, even like the impeachment proceedings, both the civil and the criminal cases. And I'm sure John will mainly focus on what's happened with him. And my little talk is going to be on the alternate electors in Arizona being prosecuted, as well as other attorneys, conservative attorneys like John, who have been targeted.
Yep, it's an ever growing list, just like the J6ers. But it's called Get Trump Lawfare Conference, the Get Trump Lawfare Conference. And if you would like to be a part of this tomorrow, you go to davosinthedesert.us. Davos, D-A-V-O-S, like, you know, the one in Europe, only not. davosinthedesert.us, and that's it. And they have to sign up, right? And it costs $25
at least? I think it's a minimum $25 donation.
Okay. So, and it starts 7:30 a.m., and that would be Pacific time. So that's, you have to figure that out, those of you in other time zones. So we'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can find it. But it is Tuesday. Oh, I should say it will be Tuesday, May the 21st. So it depends on when you hear the broadcast. But Rachel Alexander, you're doing great work. Again, she's a reporter for the Arizona Sun-Times and the Star News Network. Are you doing great stuff, Rachel, just presenting the truth and swinging away. So we wish you all the best and God's protection. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. God bless, Annie.
Thank you. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Some of you are, you know, you have more finances than others. We're not all the same. Some of you are struggling, but others of you still have good resources. And if you have those kinds of resources, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would reach 200 babies and their moms. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios,
and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com.
A state grand jury made up of everyday regular Arizonans has now handed down felony indictments for all 11 Republican electors, as well as several others connected to this scheme. These charges include fraud, forgery, and conspiracy. These charges are Class 2, 4, and 5 felonies. These are serious indictments, but this is the first hurdle the state must pass in our constitutional criminal justice system. We intend to prove these crimes were committed beyond a reasonable doubt. However, it must be remembered that the defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law and convicted by a jury of their peers. Though it is important to tell Arizonans about the grand jury indictments against these defendants, our office will continue its investigation into the efforts to illegally subvert the results of the 2020 presidential election.
All right, that was again Attorney General Chris Mays, and I've asked Bruce to join me, which I do every day. Sweetheart, thank you for joining me because, you know, he's an attorney, former prosecutor, former FBI agent, and he kind of feels the same way I do about these things. We get pretty upset, don't we, sweetheart?
Yeah, we sure do. I'm listening to Chris Mays, the Attorney General of Arizona, and I have to say, as an attorney myself, she has done quite a stretch here to indict these people based upon the information she released. To me, it looks like they're accusing these people that were on this alternate panel of electors of knowing that they would automatically affect Vice President Pence in his decision on January 6th as to whether or not he was going to accept that slate. And you know what's amazing is Vice President Pence did not. Not only did they not have to predict what he would do, but his own actions showed that he did not accept this panel of electors. So what's the crime here? That basically this slate of electors was basically standing as provisional electors.
That's right, just standing by in case things got resolved.
They weren't saying, you have to accept us, we're the only panel of electors. They were there in case
Vice President Pence decided we need to pause things, look back and see if there were election, if there was enough election fraud that it would have actually flipped.
Or election malfeasance, things that needed to be investigated.
Yeah, the count in Arizona. And if so, if it was determined that President Trump had won the state, then they had a set of electors to go to the Electoral College and vote. Basically, they're on standby.
But these are serious felonies, Bruce. Did you hear that?
They are.
Serious fraud, conspiracy. This is a serious indictment. She's really happy about her serious indictment. She's talking about Mark Meadows and Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman, who, as far as we know, had nothing to do with Arizona in this. I don't know about them. I could be wrong about that.
Well, I think what you're saying is one of the keys to this is, if I had to guess off the face of this, they really don't have a case. So what they're doing is they're throwing in the household names, because those are buzzwords. Rudy Giuliani, oh boy, that fires up people on the left. Oh, I can't stand that Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
John Eastman, oh, he was Trump's lawyer.
Yeah.
Things like that. Mark Meadows, oh, he was Trump's chief of staff. Those to me, because like you heard John say, now it's only John's word, but I'll take John at his word from the way I know him. He said, he never even went to Arizona. He didn't talk to these people and tell them what to do. And you know what? Even if he did, he is an attorney. He is allowed to give a legal opinion to people. It's the same thing we talked about when we talked about John's case in California. All he did was make a recommendation to President Trump on January 6th as to how he would handle things. And, you know, Rachel brought up a great point. Do defense attorneys ever get indicted for lying to the legal system? You know, I've seen defense attorneys stand up in court representing a murderer who has confessed to the crime. And the defense attorney will look right at the jury and say, my client did not kill that person. When he gave that statement, he was under the influence of drugs, or he didn't know what he was doing. And the videotape of the confession shows that the defendant was absolutely lucid, knew what he was doing, but the defense attorney will try to get him off saying, no, my client did not murder this person. And that's the way our system is.
That's standard practice. That's standard practice that defense attorneys lie. Yeah.
Because if you take this theory that A.G. Myers is using, or A.G. Mays, you would probably go ahead and indict that defense attorney for trying to subvert the judicial process in the state of Arizona.
You might think that, but the cat is out of the bag. The horse is out of the barn. So anyway, that's the way it stands in Arizona. So we'll all be watching that. I found it encouraging that Carrie Lake is ahead at least a little bit, because we know they're going to, I think. I'm not going to listen. This is the reason why we all have to be involved in this election. This is why we have to make sure we vote. You have to share information with your neighbors and friends from reliable sources. Share this podcast with them. Some of them just don't have any clue what's actually happening right now. So let's stop that. Even our family members, no matter how difficult the discussions, it's time to try to save this country as much as we humanly can, all the while knowing that God is sovereign. He can bring judgment, but I've known him in Scripture to change his mind. Haven't you? Those that you read the Scriptures know he has. So we're asking him to have mercy. We don't want the same country we have now, because who could go on like this? This is terrible. We want a new system. We need revival of people's minds and hearts, a turning to God, a cleansing. We need more purity. I don't know if that can happen, but I can if God should answer our prayers. So we ask for that. Well, I want to thank you for listening today. You can contact us a lot of different ways. You can go to social media platforms and find Sandy Rios 24/7. You can find the podcast on podcast platforms. Imagine that. You can go to sandyrios.com and listen. And if you want to leave a message, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can send us an email at sandy@afr.net. Honey, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.